Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and my guest today is Dr. David Shulkin, Undersecretary for Health at the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Also joining us from IBM is Mark Newsom. So, Doctor, the Veterans Integrated Systems Technology Architecture, also known as VISTA, which is VA's electronic health record, has robust capabilities, especially clinical applications. What is the VISTA Evolution Project, and perhaps you could highlight some of the accomplishments to date and what's next?
The VISTA Evolution Project is trying to take our current state of where our electronic medical record is and transforming it into a system that is better prepared to meet the needs in the future. And so when we developed our electronic medical record called VISTA, we actually have 130 different versions of VISTA. So every one of our medical center regions has customized it to meet their local needs. When I talked about one of my priorities was to get VA to function as a single integrated enterprise, this is a good example. In our electronic medical record, we have functioned in 130 different silos. And that has limited our ability to meet the future needs of veterans, because where healthcare is going today is it's using its data and allowing us to do analytics and to do practice changes in a single platform. So VISTA Evolution is allowing us to take those 130 versions and convert it into a single version of VISTA to allow us to meet the future needs of healthcare.
Let's talk interoperability. VA and DoD share millions of health records between the systems today. Having a veteran's complete health record from both DoD and VA, as well as the community providers, is critical to providing seamless, high-quality access to care and benefits. Firstly, would you provide a brief definition of interoperability in that context and outline key challenges to interoperability you face? And then secondly, what has the Joint Legacy Viewer done to further interoperability between VA and DoD?
Well, in April of 2016, both DoD and VA certified that we have achieved interoperability. So, definitionally, we have met interoperability. We have done that through what you've referred to as the Joint Legacy Viewer, which means that if a veteran comes to us in VA or somebody is at DoD, we have the ability to view each other's records through a joint viewer. And so we can get access, and we're doing it, as you mentioned, hundreds of thousands of times a year, accessing these records so that we know what treatments have been done in each organization. But these are read-only functions. And so they are not really the full, true interoperability that one may imagine, which would be a seamless flow of information beyond only information gathering read-only. And so in order to do that, we still have additional work to do. I think it is one of the frustrations of many. I hear it mostly from members of Congress who have said, look, you know, you're treating the same population of patients. We know where our future population of patients are coming from. They're coming from DoD. Why haven't you guys done this better? And I think that's an appropriate challenge for both the VA and the leaders of DoD to, in the future, figure out ways, particularly as healthcare gets more advanced and analytics get more advanced, for us to expand on our definition of interoperability. So while we celebrate the achievements that we've made to date, I think we still have more work to do.
VA has taken multiple steps to expand capacity at your facilities by focusing on staffing, space, productivity, VA community care. Will you elaborate on key efforts being pursued to improve access to care? How does the evolving approach to personalized, proactive, patient-centered care factor into those efforts?
Well, as I've probably mentioned several times already, our number one priority, the reason why I largely came, was to make sure that we could provide adequate access to care for veterans. And so we've done all the things that you have mentioned. We have hired close to 26,000 new employees in the VA healthcare system since the crisis hit in April 2014. We have expanded 2 million square feet of space and looking to expand further. We've added evening and weekend hours. We have improved productivity as measured by relative value units by 10%. We've expanded telehealth capabilities and a number of different things. But the most significant way that we are committing to fixing the access crisis is by implementing same-day services in every one of our medical centers by the end of this calendar year. Now, same-day services are defined right now as primary care services and mental health services in our major medical centers. And until we can assure that if a veteran presents to us with a problem that is urgent, that we can deal with that, I think we will continue to have access problems. So today, as we sit here, we have 56 medical centers that have announced same-day services in primary care and mental health. By the time that we reach the end of November, that will be up close to 80 of our medical centers, and it will be all of our medical centers by the end of December of this year. So that's one thing that we're doing. The second thing that we've done is we have really focused on clinical urgency of healthcare so that what every healthcare organization's priority should be is to match its access with its clinical urgency so that VA may have people who are waiting for routine care, eyeglasses, audiology, dental care. And that is something that unless we're provided with extensive additional resources, we may have waits. But what we can't afford to do is have veterans who have urgent medical needs waiting for health care. And that's something that's just not I'm not willing to accept that there are still veterans committing suicide or veterans with urgent needs that aren't being met. That's why we're working to implement these same-day systems by the end of this year.
You mentioned mental health and suicides. Let's explore that a little further. Long deployments, intense combat conditions require comprehensive support for the emotional and mental health needs of veterans and their families. Would you tell us more about what has been done to develop and expand VA's mental health system? What are some of the challenges you face in this area? What more can be done to improve mental health care for veterans?
Well, there is no other system in the country that has extensive behavioral health care services like the VA. We provided health care to 1.6 million veterans last year in behavioral health. We have extensive numbers of psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, suicide prevention coordinators, all dedicated to the behavioral health of our veterans. And we integrate behavioral health into our primary care settings, unlike any other healthcare system in the country, so that you don't have to have the stigma of going to a mental health clinic. You can get your mental health services as part of your primary care. And we delivered over 1 million visits in primary care mental health integration last year. We also provided 336,000 visits of mental health using telehealth services. So you can get access to qualified professionals to help, even if there aren't local healthcare professionals in your community. So VA is using these unique models of healthcare to help veterans in behavioral health. Having said that, we still have far too many people who are going untreated. Of the 20 veterans a day that take their life through suicide, which is just an alarming figure, something that we're just not willing or able to accept, and we're treating it as a national crisis. Of those 20 veterans a day, 14 of them don't get their care in the VA healthcare system, which means that they may be out there isolated, not getting the care that they need. And so we're working hard with community organizations and national groups to try to identify veterans at risk and get them the help that they need in the VA healthcare system, because we know that that saves lives.
So Dr. Shulkin, would you tell us more about your efforts to expand the use of data analytics as a tool to drive decision-making across your enterprise? And more specifically, what is VHA doing to enhance its clinical decision support efforts?
Well, this is an area that I think that VA has been working on quite some time. And as the field gets more advanced, VA's leadership in this will become clearer. We have a 30-year history of electronic information, and so our databases are quite extensive. And we have been working with analytics to use it to help veterans get better health care. We were just talking earlier about suicide. So one of the tools that we're taking from our research lab into practice this month is what we call ReachVet. It is an analytics tool that helps identify veterans at risk of suicide. And we are proactively reaching out to those veterans and contacting them and saying, how can we help? How are you doing? You know, would you like to come in? Are there resources that we might have that could help you? And so that's an example of how we're using analytics, bring it into the clinical setting and hopefully helping save lives. We are also working as part of the Vice President's Moonshot Initiative to use our data and to use our research capabilities to help advance scientific discoveries in curing cancer. We're actually partnering with IBM Watson to identify veterans' specific genomic sequencing and help target the right therapies to veterans so that they can get the very best possible therapy for their specific tumor. And this is a way that VA not only is using its analytic capabilities, but leveraging with the best technology and the best companies out there to help veterans get better outcomes.
So, doctor, as a follow-up, would you tell us more about VA's advances in genomic medicine? What can you tell us about the Million Veteran Program? And how do you plan on working with NIH's Precision Medicine Initiative cohort program?
When you take a look at precision medicine you take a look at molecular type research, VA actually started a program called the Million Veterans Program in 2009. And today, VA has the largest database in the country of genomic material of patients. We have over 500,000 veterans now in our data registry and in our storage tanks in Boston. And we are able to match that genomic data with the electronic medical records that we've had for veterans for 25 or 30 years. And we are doing research studies that no one else in the country can do. As part of this, we're actually helping the Precision Medicine Initiative at NIH get launched. Mm-hmm. And so we have signed a intra-agency agreement with the NIH in order to help support them in their precision medicine initiative through the Vice President's Moonshot Initiative. But it's VA today that is leading the country in these types of initiatives.
There's a nation of hidden heroes out there. VHA recognizes the crucial role that family caregivers play, their partners in helping our veterans as they recover from injury and illness. Would you tell us more about the caregiver support program and effort by the VA to support these caregivers?
VA is unique in its role in supporting family caregivers. We support currently 23,000 caregivers who are helping our veterans throughout the country. And we actually hope to expand that program. And there are some legislative proposals pending that would allow us to do that. But these are so critical to the health of our veterans. And if it weren't for these caregivers and our support for them, our veterans may be forced to leave their homes and be put in institutions or be readmitted to hospitals or have to have much more extensive treatment. One of our research programs has demonstrated that people who have caregivers at home are able to access our primary care services and our specialty services more, which means that they're getting the care that they need because of those caregivers, and that's preventing them from having to be in the hospital or in other types of institutions. So we believe this is not only the right thing to do for veterans, we actually think it's the right thing to do also for taxpayers because it's the most economical way of providing the support for veterans that is in their homes.
If I may expand on that just a second. So a lot of these hidden heroes, these caregivers or family members, is there consideration given to that population who does not have a family member that's willing to step up to the plate? They're alone, they're single, you know, but they still have the same needs.
Yes, VA is recognizing that people who don't have family members still need caregivers. We are providing home health support, and we certainly do not restrict our caregiver program to family members. There needs to be that type of commitment to be in the program, and people need to qualify that they're willing to make that commitment. But we recognize that there are many people who can play the role of caregivers.
What is the Veteran Health Administration doing to advance healthcare innovation? We will ask Dr. David Shulkin, Undersecretary for Health at VA, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.